everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Smashy Business Show. Today is September 17th, 2024. It is a Tuesday, and my name is Hindal Dah. I am here with Abdul Majid Awan, my co-host. How are you, Abdul Majid?
I'm good. It's a good Tuesday. And we have a guest on the show, so it's going to be a very jam-packed show.
Very exciting as well. I'm excited for the guest. So as Majid said, it is jam-packed. We'll get straight into our news. So we have Umar Kamani and Naomi Campbell launching KC Global Partnerships in Dubai. UAE Media Council issues 230 licenses to content creators. Lulu Group plans IPO by November. And Dubai launches RDI Grant Initiative. Let's go in with our first story, Umar Kamani and Naomi Campbell. I think we spoke about Umar Kamani on the show before, but he is
he's the founder of Pretty Little Thing. It's a big retail giant, which is based in America, US. But Umar Kamani recently announced, like 1 week ago, that he's joining Pretty Little Things back. He left Pretty Little Things. It's a very tongue-twisting name, Pretty Little Thing.
Pretty Little Thing.
So yeah, Pretty Little Thing. He left them in 2023. He sold the remaining shares that he held, more than 30% of the shares. He sold it back to Boohoo, which is owned by his father and his family. So he sold it them and left and started working around here and there. He opened a gym in the way, which is a very private, exclusive gym.
A lot of celebrities have been to the gym even.
So a lot of celebrities have trained at that gym. They always visit that. It has a luxury car collection as well. On his Instagram page, he has like 4 or 5 things that he's listed. There's a PR company, KW, which he runs. There's a lot of things that he does. But then he came back and he said that the problem was that the brand had lost its original identity and a lot of things that the brand was known for, they're coming back. So now, after that announcement, the big announcement is that he is partnering with Naomi Campbell. Naomi Campbell has also worked with Pretty Little Things.
Yeah, she's a very famous supermodel.
She's a supermodel. She's a philanthropist. She has done whatever you can do as a celebrity.
So and now she's collaborating with Umar.
Umar Kamani. And they're launching a talent agency. That's very big step and very big thing for Dubai, especially. It's supposed to be in Dubai Hills Business Center. Business Park. So what will happen is they will collaborate, they'll get talent to get partnerships with brands. So they're filling the gap between talent and brands. This talent agency will be run by two heads that they've hired from a lot of big agencies. So they're bringing in a lot of things for the new talent in Dubai who are ready to earn some money by partnering with brands.
Yeah, so it's run by two pretty exclusive people. I mean, Naomi Campbell. I mean, that's incredible that she's setting up a business here in Dubai. And I think it will attract even more content creators / influencers or whoever has talent to sign up to this talent agency.
Out of the 6,700 millionaires that are coming to Dubai, Naomi Campbell is one of them. Mm-hmm. She may not move, but she's setting up shop at least in the city.
Right.
So the key leadership, apart from Umar Kamani and Naomi Campbell, will include Amy Simmons. She's a PR and talent director. She is moving to the Middle East for this purpose now. And Safina Hussain, she's a partnership director for this new company, which is called KC Global Partnerships. So Dubai is becoming a hub for talent and innovation, I guess. And this is the perfect time for Umar Kamani and Naomi Campbell to bag in and make money out of it.
Yeah.
Make money out of the partnerships.
Yeah, and speaking of talent and making content and making money from content, moving on to our next story. So the UAE Media Council has issued 230 licenses to content creators, among other licenses. So they gave it for social media content creators for advertising in the first half of this year. And a lot of other licenses also were issued for radio, TV, newspapers, and magazines. Basically, anything you can think of that is related to the media have been issued. And this is to to foster a more media-friendly environment, and make sure it's all functioning properly. And you know,
main thing is that the UAE Media Council, they have to approve a lot of things.
Yes.
Even the movies, they have to approve. They approve whatever is going on in the media scene in the UAE. So there's a lot of book titles that they've, nearly half a million book titles that they've approved. They have approved 339 films for screening, and they've also supported theatrical, film, and TV script productions. So everything goes through them. There's a lot of things involved, like PG-18 ratings. A lot of ratings are involved in books and movies and all the publications that go out. So everyone gets an approval from them. The interesting part was always about the content creators, because 230 licensed to content creators, they're trying to legalize content creation in the UAE.
Right.
They don't just want anyone to just go up and approach brands and just start earning money. They want to legalize it. A lot of content creators, when this news came out nearly last year, they had problems with it, that why should we register with any authority? But it's a good process. It helps you prevent fraud.
Right.
Because a lot of content creators, not a lot actually, some of the content creators, the black sheep actually, they would go out and make brand deals and then not deliver the deliverables. So at the end of the day, the contract agreement between the brand and the content creator, there was a lot of problems going on. So they came up with the legal solution for it. And it's, I guess it's a very good thing, because now you'll have a registry of all the content creators. So that's good for the content creators as well.
And it's important to know that you cannot operate without a license. And if you do, you do face a fine. I believe in Dubai and Abu Dhabi, it can go up to 15,000. Even an extra 15,000 for other types of fees. So it can round up to 30,000. And it depends on different emirates. So, you know, in Ras Al Khaimah, it's different. In Ajman, it's different. So if you are an influencer and you are operating in any of those emirates, make sure to go to the respective authorities and sign up for a license, or else you will be fined.
And it can become a USP. Nearly now it has become a USP, because when people want to work with the brands, content creators, they can present it as a USP that, oh, we are licensed. So it gives you an edge. The brand will obviously try to work with the content creator who is licensed by the authority, because the brand doesn't want to get into any trouble.
They want to see you as legitimate.
Yeah. For example, if I am a content creator, I work with a brand and someday I'm fined, the brand will also get affected that, oh, this content creator did something for us and now they're banned.
True.
So they don't want to go into negative light. That is why it's good to get a license. Go get a license. Don't get fined.
Right. Let's move on to our third story of the day. Lulu Group plans an IPO by November. Now, a lot of brands, we're seeing a lot of brands going public or going for IPO.
Across the Middle East.
Across the Middle
East. Not just the way UAE.
Yes,
everyone
and
in this region is going.
They're trying to do it by the end of this year or by next year, in the coming months, basically. So Lulu Group, which is a UAE-based retail giant, I'm sure everybody has heard of Lulu Hypermarket, is set to launch its IPO by late October or early November, with an expected valuation between $1.5 billion to $1.85 billion. And it will be dual listed. So it will be on Saudi's Tadawul and on Abu Dhabi's Securities Exchange, or ADX. And major banks like Emirates NBD, HSBC, and Abu Dhabi Commercial Bank and Citigroup are managing this IPO. And it's expected to be four or even five times bigger than recent retail IPOs in the region. So it's
and
big.
Maybe they're talking about Talabat, which is also raising an IPO.
Yes.
The Delivery Hero owned Talabat, they're also going for an IPO at the end of this year. They've announced, they've made the announcement right now. They've also hired three banks, JP Morgan, if I'm not wrong, ENBD, and one more. So they have three banks who are handling the IPO. It will go live in Q4 2024, and we're nearly there. Talabat is also going to raise a lot of money in billions. Right now, they sent out a company presentation. Delivery Hero sent out a Talabat company presentation to show that Talabat is the best thing to invest in right now. All these tactics are used to get a higher share price when the company is listed. Lulu Group, everyone knows it. It's not a small brand. It's one of the biggest brands. It gives competition to one of the biggest international brands, Carrefour. In the UAE.
Right.
In India, it has a very big presence. So it has an overall globally recognized presence. So if they're raising money, it's more, again, it's most probably for expansion.
Expansion,
yeah,
right.
So they're trying to raise nearly $1 to $1.8 billion dollars. So the good thing would be that I always say that investment in these brands is always good, because they are based in the most stable economy that we see right now in the world, the Middle Eastern economy. and especially UAE and Saudi Arabia.
Mm-hmm.
So UAE has the best economy. They're going for IPO on Abu Dhabi Stock Exchange. They're Abu Dhabi based, so that gives them a lot of security. So
now I have Lulu. A question, Majid. So if Lulu Hypermarket goes public, does that in any way affect the prices for consumers when they go into their hypermarkets?
No, depends. Sometimes some companies which are, it's a very weird case in a lot of, there can be 1 million scenarios. The easiest scenario is they go for expansion mm-hmm. through IPOs. The next best case scenario is they go to make their products better or maybe open more malls in the same area. So if they're mm-hmm. UAE based, they may be trying to go for mall shops here, but they're going for expansion. They're going outside of Middle East and other regions. So that's the good thing. My point right here would be that they're going for expansion.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that they're facing laws, so they're raising an IPO to get money from the public and then reinvest into the business to make it profitable.
No, they're doing they pretty well.
They're mm-hmm. doing pretty
okay,
well.
That's
Everyone
good
is
to
doing
know.
Pretty well in this region.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, the Lulu Group IPO is expected in November. So go check out the details.
Now, finally, let's move on to our final story before our guest arrives. We have Dubai is launching a research, development, and innovation grant initiative, and this was approved by the Crown Prince of Dubai, Sheikh Hamdan bin Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum. And this is part of their research and development program. This initiative will provide funding for up to 20 research projects focused on cognitive cities, health and life sciences, robotics, and artificial intelligence. And there have been a lot of new initiatives done for these sectors. So we saw last week we did a report on the new university that is set to be inaugurated in the coming years, which focuses on certain these like futuristic topics or the challenges we face, which includes AI and robotics. So this funding will fund up to 20 research projects.
So if you're any startup, or if you're working, or if you have a project in AI, robotics, or any of the categories, you can go and check out this initiative. If you have anything related to this, go apply for this. It's like free cash. You'll get funding for your research project, and obviously when you start your project in Dubai, usually you will get
even
to
more
scale
funding.
It up easily.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's a very good initiative. Go apply for it. Mainly, what Dubai is doing is they're spending a lot of money on research and development, that is R&D. And research and development always leads to more better projects.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen Museum of Future in Dubai. We've seen the Burj Khalifa. They're not easy to make. A lot of research goes into first making the plan and then getting approvals and then building it, actually. So all these things are the perfect example of innovation in Dubai.
Mm-hmm.
So go there, apply for it, Google it.
Yeah.
It's called Dubai RDI Grant Initiative.
Yeah. So this
and if you have anything related to it, go,
uh-huh.
apply.
Yeah, so the initiative will drive both public and private partnerships and collaborations with universities and research institutions, and this will we'll expect to see Dubai to make significant advancements in technology, life sciences, and AI, which will ultimately contribute to its goal of global leadership in R&D.
Thank you so much. We discussed a lot of things. Omar Kamani and Naomi Campbell are launching KC Global Partnerships in Dubai. If you're a talent, go, subscribe with them, register with them, and they'll get you good brand partnerships because they're two of the biggest names in the industry
mm-hmm.
right now. Apart from that, we talked about Lulu going for an IPO in October, late October or start of November, or at least November. So they're going for an IPO, and UAE Media Council has issued 230 licenses to content creators. So go get your license as well if you're a content creator. And apart from that, in a bit, we'll have a guest.
Yes, we'll have a guest from Tetra Pak Arabia. He is the Regional Sustainability Director of the Middle East and Africa, Marcelo Piva. So make sure you're tuned in to find out more about this very interesting company that you may know more than you think.
Yeah.
Yes.
So we'll see you in a short while.
Welcome back on the show, everybody. This morning, we have a guest from Tetra Pak Arabia. Tetra Pak is the world's leading food processing and packaging solutions. The company offers packaging, filling, machines, and processing for dairy, beverages, cheese, ice cream, and prepared food. So basically, anything carton you see in the supermarket, it's probably made by Tetra Pak. Please welcome Tetra Pak Sustainability Director of the Middle East and Africa Regions, Mahsalu Piva. Mahsalu, welcome to the show. How are you feeling?
Thank you very much. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for having me here. Mm-hmm, looking course. Forward for some interesting and fun discussions about sustainability.
First of all, can you tell us about Tetra Pak? What exactly is Tetra Pak?
Well, Tetra Pak, as per the short introduction that you just made, first of all, we are more than a packaging producer. Mm-hmm. So Tetra Pak is an end-to-end solution supplier for any food processing, servicing, and packaging. So it means that if you are a farmer and if you have you are producing oranges, so we can come to you and we can offer solutions from all the way of managing the let's say crops and managing the production of oranges, all the way to processing, to servicing, to packaging, to filling machines, all the way to the shelves with your own brand to consumers. So the one thing that is interesting is as consumers, even before joining Tetra Pak, we don't know much of Tetra Pak because right. we are not a brand to consumers. So we are actually supporting our customers, mm-hmm. the brand owners, mm-hmm. in order to launch their products, which we know all of us in our daily lives. Everybody here is drink milk, juice, eat cheese, ice cream. So in one way or another, I mean, to put it in short, it's an end-to-end solution in regards to food processing and packaging.
And in terms of Tetra Pak, your mission is sustainability and reusing all the materials that you find. So can you tell us more about that aspect of it?
At Tetra Pak, when we talk about sustainability, it comes from our own brand promise. So we commit to make food safe and available everywhere. Mm. So this is what guides us. And while doing that, we protect what's good. And by protecting what's good, we protect people, we protect food, and we protect the planet. So this is how the brand promise linked to how we do that comes to all our sustainability initiatives.
Right.
So,
and your sustainability report that you published.
Exactly.
It's exactly about that. Right?
Yes. So what happened is that Tetra Pak is, from its beginning, from the 1951, when we started from Ruben Rausing. By the way, Tetra Pak is still a family-owned company. So still it belongs to the family, still it brings all the principles and all the beliefs of the same family now in the third generation. So sustainability and the environment is something that is one of our pillars mm-hmm. because the whole purpose is that a package should save more than it costs.
Right.
So what happens is that it has been embedded in our operations way before any discussions. Even if you remember, sustainability was not called sustainability a few years ago. It was called environment. And then it evolved to something beyond the environment, which is sustainability. So we have been publishing sustainability reports already for decades everywhere in the world. Mm-hmm. But the funny and exciting part is that we just launched this week our Arabia area specific sustainability report, mm-hmm. which means that we have enough activities and actions here on ground that justifies us preparing a specific sustainability report for the Arabia area.
Mm-hmm. And can you tell us about what kind of initiatives you have made in the region, especially in the UAE and Saudi Arabia? What are the main highlights, can you say, that prompted sustainability developments in this region?
Of course. In the sustainability report, which I, by the way, invite all of you to access, you'll be given the link and then you can go and read. We really invite you because it's a very interesting read. We cover the areas of biodiversity, climate, circular economy. So all of those areas, we have on-ground initiatives that we are doing. But the ones that are really, I would say, part of my main purpose, because, by the way, I have been working at Tetra Pak for about 15 to 16 years. I come from Brazil. Mm-hmm. So, and my background is environment engineer with master's in chemical engineering. So I am all about this processing equipment, machines, technical development. And when I started in the company, I was responsible to develop technologies to recycle our packages. So recycling is really close to my heart. And those initiatives here in the area, both in Saudi Arabia and in the UAE, we have actual on-ground initiatives for collection and recycling of the what we call the beverage cartons or the tartan packages. For example, this one that I'm just holding here, where after consumption, consumers can then send it for recycling, and then it gets collected and recycled mm-hmm. by our recycling partners that we have here in the region. Mm-hmm.
So how much time did you take to build a whole operational network? Because collection and then collection from different points, it's not just urban collection, it's rural collection as well. So it takes a lot of time to perfect the whole cycle, right? So how much time did it take to make the whole process perfect, that picking up the carton from one place and then recycling it? How much time does it take for one carton average to go from a farmer's shop or some retail shop in the city to actually go recycle and become another new carton maybe?
Yes, that's an interesting question. And Majid, what I can say is it does take time to develop an entire what we call recycling value chain. Yeah. So how do we take that? Because if you talk about, but how much time does it take? Mm-hmm. Or how many packages are being recycled globally or in a year? So it all depends on which area that you're talking about. So the more developed the market is, the more mature it is, with environment regulations, extended producer responsibility, which we call it EPR, the waste management sector infrastructure for consumers to have access to separate their waste at home, and then it reaches the proper recycling institutions and then gets recycled into high value materials. This is not everywhere the same. So what happens here in the region is that, unfortunately, we are still under development when it comes to waste management regulations, infrastructure, and recycling. And I'm talking about overall our Arabia area, which is like we call Arabia area the 12 countries that we look at, but talking Saudi, UAE, as you asked me for. So what we have done, we have taken a very proactive approach, which means 10 years ago, when nothing about collection, recycling, sustainability was being discussed in the region, we took the initiative and then we brought development, technology, and investment to the region. So we have started looking at who could we partner with from local recycling companies, which we eventually, after several years of discussions, interventions, and investments, we managed to have what we have today. So we do have two recycling partners in Saudi Arabia. One is a paper recycler, OPI, in Riyadh, and the other one is a plastics recycler, STP. And in the UAE, we are about to launch, I'm not going to give it a lot of spoil, but we are about to launch within this year a partnership with UPM, Union Paper Mills, here in Dubai. Nice. So what does this mean? It means that we, in the value chain, which is like consumption, separation, sorting, collection, and recycling, we started it from the backwards. Oh. So we started with the recycling solution. In other words, we create a demand for the material. And then from there, you give steps back. So if you ask me today if we do have already in this region a strong recycling value chain, not only for Tetra Pak cartons, but overall for packaging, for recyclables, not yet. But this is something that is coming, and we are collaborating a lot with the industry, with governments, and we have several initiatives that we are taking. So I know that I didn't give you a straight answer. Yeah, yeah. How much time does it take from point A to point B? But actually, because this in between the points is still under construction, in a federal level, in collaboration with industry.
You actually gave me an answer that depends on the region. So good developed economies obviously will do it quickly, because every step of the way in the value chain, everything is developed, so you have easier access to it. I guess the leading question from your thing is, last year UAE had the year of sustainability, this year they extended it. How do you see it? Did it actually help Tetra Pak in the region and in the country specifically? Did you get any good support from private companies, because a lot of brands work with Tetra Pak? So because of sustainability becoming the topic in UAE last year and this year, are the companies doing more, the partners that you work with, in terms of sustainability?
Absolutely. Because as I was saying, sustainability is part of our, since our inception, since we started. And it makes much easier for us to drive our own agenda when we have all the other stakeholders under the same, you know, umbrella and on the same page. So we do have at Tetra Pak our strategy 2030 and 2050. So for example, by 2030, we want to become net zero carbon emissions in all our own operations. And then by 2050, all the entire value chain.
Thanks.
So that's something that takes a lot of effort, because when we talk about our own operations, this is one thing, it's under our control. But when it comes to the entire value chain, then you need all the players to be pushing
together.
On the
same page, right?
So the way we see when we see such announcement, you know, the 2023 is the year of sustainability in the UAE, and then 2024 now a lot of actions, and 25 we already see a lot of upcoming things. So it does help us, because we can drive our agenda, but not our own agenda. We can actually drive the industry agenda. So in that regard, what is happening a lot now, both in Saudi Arabia and in the UAE, is that the governments, they came to understand that really it's an urgency to have the waste management regulations, policies in place. Because then with those proper regulations, you can understand what is the role and responsibility of each one of the actors in the value chain, including us consumers, because we also have a strong obligation to make recycling work. So what has been happening is that we, as industry, we have been collaborating to each other in a way that we have launched a circular packaging association here in the UAE, and it's already licensed under the Dubai Chambers. And officially, we are collaborating with the Ministry of Economy, Ministry of Climate Change, in shaping up these new policy and regulations that are coming up in the UAE. The same in Saudi Arabia, when we have the National Committee for Circular Packaging, that we are collaborating with MOAN, the regulator in Saudi Arabia. So what I'm trying to say is the governments, they understand the value that the industry can bring to these discussions, because, you know, one way or another, in the end of the day, the policies should come to make things happen and to enable and accelerate development. Mm-hmm. And this can only happen when you have this dialogue.
Yeah.
So collaboration between industry and the public sector, the governments, is crucial, and something that we have been deeply involved, because that's what we believe, I mean, as the way forward to make it happen and to evolve all the value chain for recycling in both countries.
Now, you're talking about the importance of partnering with governments to help with recycling and stuff. But as consumers, what exactly can like I, as a person, how can I really contribute to the circular economy instead of, you know, whatever I'm purchasing ending up in the landfill? So what can I do as a consumer and to
how
others watching? Exactly, that's the question.
Exactly. Well, the best way first is when you choose your products, when you are buying your products, you try to understand what is the best alternative that you have for a product that is less hazardous to the environment, that you have lower carbon footprint when preparing it, that is recyclable, and that can be put together back in the recycling value chain.
And just to make sure, tin cans don't have that effect, do they, or glass jars?
All the materials, they have their, I would say, own recycling value chain, and they have their development. So you have, of course, you have advantages in one type of material. You have disadvantages in other types of material, depending on how you compare it, because that's another open statement. When you say which one is better, again, how are you comparing them?
Yeah.
In which area, in which time, in which conditions? That's why we talk about the life cycle analysis, that you... you do a specific analysis in a specific geography that you want to evaluate, and there, under the same conditions, you can properly compare. We cannot come here with, for example, a report from the US or a report from Europe and say that the same happens in the UAE or in Saudi. But as consumers, as I was saying, I mean, when we choose what we buy, I mean, when we consume it, of course, responsibly, so not buying more than what you need. We learned a lot during the COVID times that we should be very aware of how much we buy and what we buy, how we consume. And more than that is we all know, we understand that the infrastructure is not ideal or perfect today for us to do our part when we are sorting the separating the waste at home, recyclables right. from non-recyclables. Mm-hmm. We understand it's not optimal, but there are options around. So there are some voluntary initiatives that you can take, for example, your recyclables to back to the supermarkets. Mm-hmm. And there they would have a recycling station that you can drop it there. So this type of habits that we, when we go to supermarket, we just put this bag of recyclables. It's not garbage. Mm-hmm. It's just mm-hmm. packaging that you put in your car when you go to do your shopping, and then you just drop it there. Already is a big contribution as a consumer that we will do. Mm-hmm. And of course, later on, as things evolve, then of course, fulfilling our obligations of separating all the waste at home whenever we consume it.
I was reading the sustainability report and I came across school feeding programs that you've been a part of in 49 countries. Sounded very interesting. I would love the audience to know about it. What are the school feeding programs you've participated in? It says 49 countries received milk or other nutritious beverages in Tetra Pak packages through school feeding programs. So is it like a Tetra Pak initiative or were you part of a bigger initiative?
Yeah, it is. It is a Tetra Pak initiative, but part of the bigger one.
Oh, nice.
So we know that the UN, they have globally programs that they assist countries in nutrition for kids, for the schools. And we also have the brand owners, which are our customers, who also have this responsibility, social responsibility on the school feeding programs. So it's a combined effort from all these parties, which look into how to support kids when they are coming to the schools to get proper nutrition. It even helps them to go to the school because sometimes they go to a school because they know that they are going to receive some, you know, like milk or biscuits or any type of this school feeding initiative. Mm-hmm. So it helps in both sides, and it does help a lot in the development itself, the healthy development. A lot of reports and evaluations are made from the kids, checking the height, the weight, and the improvement in their nutritional aspect is really strong. So out of all these countries, the good thing is in the Arabia area, we also have started such initiatives.
Nice.
So last year we have run, I can mention three of them. One is in Yemen for about 10,000 kids. They received through our customer HSA, the brand, they received milk and also ordered some, I mean, as you say, biscuits and nutritional elements there in Tetra Pak packages, and also education on sustainability, environment, and why this is important. The same in Saudi Arabia. We did it with 125,000 kids together with our customer Sadafco and the Saudia Milk. So they have been given milk, I mean the kids, and they were teach about, how to nutrition, why is it good for you, and what to do with the packages after you consume. So then they were all, they got the classes and then they were taking the packages, they were folding them, they were putting in the recycling bin, and then it was getting recycled. And the bins themselves, they were made from recycled material from Tetra Pak.
So it's nutrition and education at the same time.
I mean, that's incredible.
Yes, exactly. And another one is in Iraq. It's a much bigger one because this also involves government and it's a bigger initiative. 800,000 kids.
Nice.
So they got as well nutrition information. They got nutrition supplements in our packages. And again, it's really something that is, it goes beyond any commercial agreements or beyond any branding, because in the end of the day, it's giving back to communities and it makes us feel very proud of it.
Do you have any similar initiative that happened in the UAE or possibly in the future that's going to happen?
Of course, we plan to have soon, hopefully by next year, some school programs here. It's a bit different on the initiative because it will be more towards education of the kids, because you don't have the same level of needs as you have in some of these underdeveloped economies and countries. But we do plan to have education with the kids. And already through this partnership that we have with the new recycler that we are launching here, we will be implementing collection at schools. So the kids, again, they can bring their materials from home, they can bring it to the school, they can also consume at the school the products and then get, of course, education and awareness about recycling, and it gets collected for recycling
in the recycling partners. Yeah, even in my university, and at some points, so I live in Sharjah, and our main company for environment and sustainability is BIA, and they always have these little checkpoints where you can drop off plastic or cartons or even clothes sometimes. So it goes into this whole process of reusing, and so it contributes to this circular economy of the United Arab Emirates. So I think it's a great thing to have something that's right there, and you can just drop off your recyclable materials and stuff. So
one more question. Sorry, we're keeping you for a long time.
No,
but yeah, consumers. We have seen that the new generation, especially the Gen Z, the newer generation, they're very. They're very conscious about sustainability. How do you see that also that helps, right, in your overall mission? Because they want to consume products which are packaged in environmental friendly packages. Overall, the sustainability idea is very good in their mind. Usually it used to be a cool idea, but now they know that a lot of the world and the global warming and a lot of things that are attached to it, they depend on being sustainable. How do you see that? Have you do you have a story, or have you seen it firsthand? Have you do you interact, like the company interacts with them?
Yes. Yes, it does help because consumers are in the end who are going to consume the product. Yeah. So the whole chain will work towards towards consumption. At Tetra Pak, we have what we call the Tetra Pak Index. So we run surveys globally every year in selected markets in the Arabia area. We have UAE and Saudi Arabia as included in those global researches, where we go to consumers, all types, I mean, young generation, older ones, men, women, and etc. So then we go and we ask several types of questions. So from there, we understand how prepared or how willing to consume more sustainable products they are, including if they are open to pay more for that. Because remember, sustainability is about all the pillars. So economics also are there. So some of the innovations, they do cost a lot. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to the end products, it also brings some of this cost part of it. Mm-hmm. So the good news is that even in regions like ours, which in the past are, I mean, we were seen as a region that doesn't really think about it, these numbers or the level of interest and the level of commitment has been increasing very exponentially. So that's a very good sign for us. Because as a leader, as a global leader in producing this type of, you know, what we call the aseptic packaging, as we are at Tetra Pak, we must be always innovating, and we must be always investing to make it more and more sustainable. Just to give you an example, in the past couple of years and for the next 5 to 10 years, we have been investing 100 million euros per year only to redesign the package.
Nice.
So today our packages, they are composed by paper, plastic, and aluminium. Mm-hmm. This composition of those three materials is what enables the package to fulfill its role of keeping food safe in ambient temperature. So you don't need to refrigerate it unless if you, after you open, then it's okay. But before you open, you can keep food safe for a long period of time. So all these places where you have infrastructure issues with electricity, you don't have a chilled chain, so you can still have food available there.
Mm.
So in the past few couple of years and for the next, all this investment in redesigning. Why? Because we understand that the simpler we make the structure of the package, the easier it gets to recycle, and the less carbon footprint it will be, let's say, issuing. So we have already come up with some innovations, for example, the aluminium foil. We already have a fiber or paper-based foil to replace it.
Nice.
And this is already in shelves in Europe, in Portugal, and of course it will be deployed globally. Only by doing that, even though aluminium is only 5% of the packaging material composition, more than 35% reduction in CO2 emissions of the package were achieved.
So imagine, that's a big
number. Just a small part you change, but it makes a big difference.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then the next step now, we are working with the plastics. By the way, this package that we are holding here, all the plastic that are used in this package comes from sugarcane. So it's not the normal oil, fossil-based plastic. It's actually from sugarcane. By chemical reactions, they produce plastic out of sugarcane. So it's a plant-based or bio-based plastic. Let's not confuse with biodegradable, bio-based, which means that it's the same plastic as the normal plastics, but it comes from a different source, which means much lower carbon emissions because it's a growing a crop, right? So the sugarcane grows and then gets carbon dioxide from the atmosphere and then they make the plastics. So the plastics are already plant-based, but what we are evolving now is that we are bringing recycled plastics to our packages.
So it's basically reusing whatever material you guys received and making these
packages.
You don't have to create more product, you just recycle it and bring it back. So
exactly. The idea is that, I mean, we are in this journey to develop the most sustainable food packaging in the world. So what does this mean? It's made only from recyclable or renewable materials. It's fully recyclable and it's carbon neutral. So that's the vision that we have and that's why all these investments come. So to your question, the issue is when you come with all these innovations and all this development, you must ensure that it's still going to be a competitive product because we have brands that rely on us to become and to remain competitive as well. So it's always this equation that you need to look at.
So
you know?
It's, the summary is that people are ready to pay more for eco-friendly products and packaging, but it should be like certified that, they are eco-friendly packages. So it's good that the consumer perception and the consumer idea is changing. And you talked about the index.
Exactly.
That's great.
So one important point as consumers, I was saying, you know, for consumers, always look for the labels, you know, because, for example, all this, these packages from Tetra Pak, they are produced with paper coming from certified forests. So it's not native forests that have been explored to produce paper. It's from certified FSC forests. So the plant-based or the bio-based plastics is certified by Bom Sucro, which then certifies the chain that makes... So everything that is certified, that you have reliable and official logos, that you have labels in your packaging, it helps you as a consumer to understand that this is something that is real, you know?
Thanks. So a lot of the summary that we saw from Mr. Marcelo Piva, the regional sustainability director of Tetra Pak Arabia, is that consumer perception is changing towards product. They want more eco-friendly products. They're ready to pay some premium on it. Tetra Pak, again, is doing a great job on their on-ground initiatives. The sustainability report that they've published talks a lot about their initiatives. You can go and find the link when we publish this podcast on our all social media channels. And thank you very much, sir, for coming here, answering our difficult questions. I know as consumers, we always want to know more and more. And the best thing that he said is read the label.
Right.
That's like the highlight of me, highlight for me for the interview, that read the label, know where your product is coming from before you buy it. So you know that you are also contributing to sustainability.
So you can always find this podcast if you missed the first half of the show or you want to look back more information about Tetra Pak. You can also find us on all these streaming platforms like Anghami, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Like Majid said, on all social media platforms like X, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. We also have a daily newsletter that comes out every morning, so make sure to check that out. Once again, thank you so much, Marcelo, for coming on the show, and thank you, everybody, for joining us.